My name is Franceli Plaza, and this is How I Create.
Welcome to This Is How We Create, a show that digs deeper into the creative life of contemporary artists of color. Discover what feeds their creativity and how they've found or are finding their artistic voice. Through these intimate and candid conversations, you'll gain insights into the lives of creative professionals of color that are hard to find anywhere else. In today's episode, I chat with my friend and longtime colleague and makeup artist, Franceli Plaza. If there's such a thing as a skin guru, Franceli would have that title. And during our talk, she shares how from childhood, her Barbies and crayons have helped shape the person and the artist that she would become. She explains her journey as an artist and how she realized that the skin would indeed be her true canvas. Franceli reveals the mistakes she made while entering the freelancing world and how her growing expertise has changed how she approaches her work over time. Enjoy. Franceli Plaza is a freelance makeup artist born and raised in Chicago. An artist at heart, she made the decision over 15 years ago to make the human face her canvas. Since then, working with makeup has become her expertise and beauty her passion. Franceli worked at Sephora for over 9 years as a senior makeup artist, where she was in charge of Sephora's makeup artist team development. In that role, she taught and certified new makeup artists at Sephora stores. If you've ever had the pleasure of working with Franceli, she is grace under fire. She has a calming quality that reinforces her mastery and knowledge of all things makeup and beauty products. Welcome to the show, Franceli.
Hi, Martine. Thank you for having me.
Yay. I'm so pleased that we're able to chat, because this is a little funny for me because we've been working with each other for a number of years now, and I love you so much.
I love you so much too.
I always want to have you on my team because I know that if you're on my team, I don't have to worry. Everything's going to go exactly as planned and beyond my expectation. Knowing that, I'm so interested during this conversation to get to know you in a different way. And so to that end, can we go way back to you as a little girl? What were you like when you were growing up?
Oh, I was definitely shy. I was an introvert. I loved art. I loved anything that had to do with art. I remember just playing in my room with my dolls and drawing. I had this thing where I would have Barbies and I would not necessarily play with them like you normally would with Barbies, like talking when you see little kids talking with their dolls, but more so like I would create a scene on my vanity and I would set them up in a way where they were interacting and it would be a display. And so I remember that really vividly just because I think that that's how my mind works. I always want to make something and like create something and just have it freeze. I would have it set up in this display for about a couple of days until I got bored of it. And then I would switch them up into a different scene.
Can you tell me a little bit about what those scenes were about? Do you remember? What scenes did you create?
Well, I had a grocery store that I received for like a birthday present. And so it was, I remember that there were like fruits and vegetables and there was the conveyor belt and the register. And I would set up my Barbies as if they were buying something at the grocery store. So there would be, you know, the mom and her baby and the little baby in the cart. And I would just have people like picking different fruits and different characters would be doing different things. So it'd be like the scene that I would just create with all of my dolls and my Barbies. And then I also had the Jeep, the Barbie Jeep. I also had the Barbie Corvette with a jacuzzi in the back. So I would fill it up with water and add bubbles and like fluff it up so that there would be bubbles. Every so often during the day, I would just come back and swoosh it a little bit so I would get more bubbles into my scene and just have my Barbies sitting in the back kind of enjoying their jacuzzi. And so I just had different scenes that I would just come up with, whatever I thought looked pretty. And I did not brush my Barbie's hair. I did not mess up their clothing. They were always intact. I think that's why my mom kept buying me different dolls too, because she knew that I wouldn't ruin them. For me, it was more the visual story that I was creating versus the narrative so much. I never really had too much play with like creating a verbal story with my toys. I think that's why I also liked puzzles a lot, because I was just a really visual kid. I mean, I remember getting so excited over 3D puzzles back in the day. Those were my thing. Those were my jam. And that was what excited me, was just kind of creating something with my hands and making it visually, just creating something and having it from start to finish, you know?
That is so interesting. My son, he has all of these stuffed animals. And one of the things that he does, which is really funny, he does talk to them.
Five or six. I was in love with the movie Cinderella. I remember getting the VHS from my uncle's friend, who gave me the VHS of Cinderella, and he gave my brother, my older brother, the ET VHS. But I played that movie, you know, so many times, and I'm sure a lot of kids do. They just kind of play and rewind. So I knew every single word to that, to every character, what they were going to say, every line from the movie. But I remember watching the Cinderella movie and noticing the outlines in all of the characters. So they were drawn back then. So I would remember seeing the black outline to everything. And in my own head, in my own world, I thought that we were drawn too. So I would look for the outlines in things. I would look for the outlines in a chair or on the table. And I remember looking at my hands and trying to find the outlines to things. And I think that's just another reason why I pay attention to lines and to shapes so much too. I think that was just the way I see things is always some sort of lines and shapes. That's one of my memories when growing up, was just kind of looking at cartoons and thinking that we all had that pencil outline around us too.
So it sounds like you started paying attention to color too at a very young age.
I was always drawing and painting and doing things, and my mom just kind of gave me that free rein. She just kind of let me do whatever I wanted. So I remember her letting me paint the back of my door. So I would paint clouds on the back of my door. I also remember winning a contest for Crayola back in the day, like at the grocery store at Jewel. They had Crayola had a contest where you would color and you know, a specific picture that they would give you, and then I remember receiving a call later in the day and saying that I won, you know, the Crayola contest, and I was so excited. My mom drove me back to the Jewel, and they gave me this big almost suitcase of, I don't know how many Crayolas, it felt like thousands of Crayolas back in the day, but with a sharpener right in the middle. And so I remember just using all of the colors and layering them. And for me, coloring wasn't just about using one color in the coloring box. I would layer the colors, and I would always try to make it dimensional and create shadows. And that was also another thing that I remember doing as a child that I just think, again, just kind of translates into what I do now.
That's so telling as to what you do today, too.
It is. And I've always known that I wanted to be an artist. I've always known that I wanted to pursue something creative, because since I was little, that's all I remember being really good at, you know?
And then from what I remember, in high school, you continued with art and learning, and then you won a scholarship, right, to go to some kind of a camp, was it?
It was for, during high school, I went to this nonprofit organization called Marwin, and they picked six students, and they gave them the opportunity to go to Maine and just kind of study off of an island off the coast of Maine, owned by a couple, and it was just a week of painting. Doing nothing but painting and exploring the island and getting inspiration and doing different things with art.
So it sounded like you wanted to be a painter. Was that right?
I knew that I wanted to do something related to art and an artistic way. I wasn't sure if I was going to necessarily be a painter. I knew that I wanted to have a career and make money, but I wasn't sure if I would succeed as a painter. So I pretty much went to school for thinking that I would be either a graphic designer, or at one point I went to school for interior design, and I just realized that it wasn't really for me. So as I was going to college is when I needed a job at that time, and I would walk through Marshall Field's makeup department, and that's how I was like, this looks like fun. I could do this. I love makeup and I can do this. It looks easy. So that was where I started to steer in that direction, and I applied for a job at one of the counters, and I got it, and I fell in love with makeup. as my medium.
Can you tell me the story of when it just dawned on you that you were falling in love with makeup?
I always liked makeup. I would always watch my aunts growing up putting on makeup, and I tried to do it myself. I tried to replicate looks out of my, you know, magazines that I would have. I knew that I loved creating something. What I didn't know was that I was going to love it so much as I started to work with different people and different faces. I started working at the clinic counter, and I had people in my chair that were anywhere from 12 years old to, you know, 60 some year old women. So it was just a lot of fun to interact with different people and get to have conversations with them and really address different skin, different eye shapes. It was, again, kind of going back to this puzzle in my head of figuring out what would look best on this person due to what their skin type was like or due to how their eye was shaped. How can I enhance this person's beauty and make them feel special? And I think that's what made me fall in love with it, was more of the, not only the connection to it artistically, but also there was an emotional connection to it with the people in my chair and with the way they felt.
What kind of words would they say to you once they saw themselves after you had finished doing a makeup application on them?
I think my favorite part was just watching their reaction as I handed them the mirror and just them, you know, smiling and feeling like they could take on the world. I mean, I feel like a lot of the times they'd be like, oh my God, this looks so good. I've never seen my eyes look this bright, or my skin looks so great. It looks, you know, it looks airbrushed, or just, you know, feeling sexy for some people was different, you know, making somebody feel like that specific moment and that day was a different feeling than any other day. You know, I think that was what was special. Or maybe even sometimes having somebody who had specific issues with them, with themselves, their self-esteem, possibly maybe they had acne, and I remember, you know, putting on makeup and having them feel more confident, and them saying that to me was very special. It was something that I didn't understand until I dove deeper into being a makeup artist, that it was a lot more to do with the emotional connection to makeup and how it made you feel.
I remember how I had this experience with you. Growing up, my mother doesn't wear makeup, and she still doesn't to this day. And so I never really learned much about makeup. I think as little girls, sometimes you choose whether you're going to be the pretty girl or you're going to be the bookish girl. And I think for some reason or another, I was the bookish girl. And so makeup was never in my skill set. And it wasn't until I was, I think, in my 20s that I first learned how to enhance my beauty. And I remember specifically how I had you give me a lesson. We were sitting in your studio, and you were just going through and showing me all of the different eyeshadows and the colors that would work best on my skin. And then afterwards, you sent me an email with all of the products that you had used. And I would say that there was something that really changed in me that day, because I remember looking in the mirror afterwards and feeling exactly like myself, but a shinier version or more confident version of myself, so to speak. And I'm assuming that's kind of like the same experience that a lot of these people would have after working with you.
Yeah, and I like that you said that you felt like yourself, because as a makeup artist, that's always what I strive for. I never want to change anybody. I see a lot of things in the makeup industry now, to where people are changing the structure, their bone structure, their face, to make them look a specific way that's not natural or is not necessarily them. To me, beauty is already there, and I almost just want to polish it off. I just want you to be the most polished version of you, the most special version of you. And so to me, it's really important to keep people's natural beauty and just enhance it. There's nothing to change, really. It's just about taking what's there and just polishing it off. It's like taking your, you know, changing from your pajamas to your favorite dress or your favorite outfit. To me, that's what I want to have my makeup feel like, is just kind of an enhanced version of yourself.
That's so beautiful. I would love to hear about your experience. So you were in Clinique, then you went to Nordstrom, correct? And then
yes.
afterwards, you went to Sephora, and you were there for a number of years, and you became a lead. I think the title is a senior makeup artist. And you must have learned so much about products and about how to train makeup artists, because essentially that's what you were doing. You were the trainer who trained. Can you tell us about what surprised you during that time and what you learned about yourself when you moved from being a makeup artist itself to being a trainer of makeup artists?
So, I mean, Sephora, back when I started, was really great at training you based on the brand. And we would get everyone from global artists from every brand to come in and talk about the brand story and talk about the ingredients and really go into full depth. So I felt like there was a specific training for every brand, and I really got to understand why their standard of beauty was the way it was. So that was a real learning lesson too, was that each brand had its identity and its DNA, and I almost had to learn that. I mean, I trained from everybody to global artists for Makeup Forever to Marc Jacobs. I trained with Anastasia herself on how to do brows. So it was really, really fun to learn from all these really great people that were in the industry and to take those lessons and kind of pass them on. It's interesting how as an artist, you're in your head a lot and you do things and you realize you're doing something like creating an eye shape or an eye look or understanding somebody's bone structure and kind of enhancing that. And you don't realize what you're doing until you do it. I feel like as a makeup artist, you're in your head, and when you start to train somebody as to what you do and how you do it, you start to verbalize it and you realize it makes sense, a lot more sense when you verbalize something. So for me, it was more about taking what I already knew and understood from the basics of artistry, from being an artist to translating that into makeup itself and all of these other trainings that I had from all these other makeup artists.
You know, when you do something and it's rote and you just do it, you do it, you do it, you don't think about what it is that you're doing because it's just, you understand it so well. But when you have to teach it, you have to break it down. And I guess one thing that I would love to know is if you could give a specific example as to what this looks like. I can assume, since you were talking about Anastasia and how your brows are so amazing,
Thank you.
And you've taught me how to get my brows to look more amazing, can you give us an example as to how you've done that, whether it's through a product and how to use the product to get a desired effect, or how you teach artists to understand skin and how products will play with the skin or show up on the skin?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, like I was saying, as a makeup artist or just as an artist in general, you're always in your head and you're always, you know what you're doing because of everything that you've learned in the past. And it's just kind of engraved in you. And so you do things without really necessarily thinking about them too much in the moment. You know what you're doing in your head. But to teach it is another thing. To teach it is to take that and really make it into, verbalize it and have somebody understand why it is that you're doing and how you're doing it. For me, it was really teaching them what different products would work better on somebody's skin type. So what you apply on somebody's skin that's oilier is going to be very different than how you apply something on somebody's skin that's drier. How do you get different effects out of different finishes and mediums, and how do you prep the skin? You know, how do you start from the very beginning to incorporating skincare into the way your makeup is going to look in the very end? So it was about different layers to everything and understanding how to communicate that to not only the artist, but how that artist would communicate that to their client, and doing something, understanding that you have to almost think about what you're going to do and having them have that process in their head too, to think ahead, starting from the very beginning, understanding what products they're going to choose to have an end result. So it's not broken down into sections. It's understanding it as a whole from the skincare to the very end, is having a game plan and teaching how to have that game plan so that when you get to the very end, it looks like what you envisioned from the very beginning. So I think that was really the learning lesson for how I taught, was giving them the knowledge of understanding the skin, understanding the person in front of them, but also how to take their vision and execute it from the beginning to the end.
Wow, that sounds like you have to be really nimble, and not only that, but you also have to be knowledgeable. And I can only imagine how much knowledge it takes to be able to do a decent job, because if anyone's ever been in a Sephora, there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of products in Sephora at any one store. And for someone to walk in, look at their, for you as a makeup artist, to look at their skin and then to able to chat with them and figure out what their pain points are and help them come up with a solution. I can't imagine. That is so much information that you have to have. And then not only that, but know how to create a solution. That's mind-boggling. I never thought about it that way before.
That's exactly it. And I almost feel like every time I learn about a new ingredient or something, a new texture in something, a new finish in an eyeshadow, I always think about who it would be good for, what type of skin it would be good for. I always kind of think about when I purchase makeup, it's not for myself, it's for my kit, and it's for that client that I'm going to be using on my kit. And, you know, when I get that client, so if I feel something, a texture of a new eyeshadow or a texture of a new foundation, I'll decide whether I need it or I need to buy it, whether it's something that I don't already have and it's something that might be better for performing on this skin type, on this oily skin or on this dry skin. Sometimes I pick up an eyeshadow, I'm like, oh, this would be amazing for somebody who has an oily eyelid, you know? So looking at ingredients and at product itself in that way is very different. I always joke to people that I'm like, I feel lost in a grocery store because I feel overwhelmed by so many ingredients in a grocery store, but put me in a makeup store and I know exactly where to go and what to buy. It almost feels like you're creating a recipe in the way of a makeup look for somebody versus kind of like a chef would create a recipe to make a delicious meal. It's kind of, for me, the same way.
One of the things I've learned from you when we've worked together is the importance of having a really good shoot deck and sending you photos and the social information for the talent that we're going to have, because I always feel like you go through and you look at these people and at their faces to be able to determine what kind of treatment you're going to use on them when they come to set. Because oftentimes, you know, based on the work that we've done, whether it's a lifestyle shoot or a beauty shoot, what you put on their skin is so important because everyone's skin is different. I've learned so much, including how to make sure that talent arrives on set well hydrated. Do you want to tell the story of what happened when the skin is not hydrated?
Yeah,
I don't know if you want to. I don't know if you want to talk. Go back to that one story of a shoot we worked on together.
Yeah, definitely. That shoot, I mean, what you see in pictures is very different than what you see in person. It's obviously sometimes photoshopped, so it can be deceiving. We got a model in that had problematic skin, and I had to use more makeup than normal to cover up for the shoot and make it a lifestyle clean shoot. So I did use a lot of products on her. But throughout the day, it was also, I think, a warmer day. I don't remember how it was, but hydration plays a lot into it. So no matter how much moisturizer I tried to get in her skin, it would just drink it up. It was how dehydrated her skin was that I kept putting product on and I just felt it being absorbed. And as a makeup artist, there's only so much you could do at that point. I could prep her skin to the best of my ability, but it has a lot to do with hydration and how you're treating your body. Throughout the middle of the shoot, what seemed at first to be perfect, her skin looked great in the first couple hours. By the end of the shoot, the skin had just absorbed all of the foundation. It had absorbed a lot of the color that I had put on, so the blush was no longer there. And that's what happens, is that if you have dehydrated skin, the skin is essentially is alive. You know, you're working on live people. So it is essentially trying to grab from whatever's on the surface to hydrate. And if it's makeup that's on the surface, then that is what the skin is trying to absorb, is the makeup in order to hydrate itself. it has a lot to do with prepping properly. I always tell people, my clients, especially if I have a bride, to make sure she stays hydrated, to use products way in advance, so that when I get to her, the skin is as best as it can be. And I've told you too that, you know, if we have a, you know, models that come onto set, as soon as they're on set, drink water, so that their skin is not drinking up the makeup.
That's one of the things that I do all the time and let the agency know. Please make sure that they are well hydrated prior to coming to the shoot. And then once they come in, the first thing we do is we make them drink water, at least a bottle. Because it's so frustrating, and it costs money too. Because at the end of the day, when those photos go to be retouched, and most retouchers, they charge by the hour. So a model whose skin is very dry, it means that the retoucher has to spend more time on their skin. And then that also means that the client has to pay more. And so that it's just,
yeah,
it costs money at the end.
And Sally, that's okay. Pretty much, I mean, and I always feel like my job as a makeup artist is to prevent that, you know, to make sure that at the end of the day, you have to do as less work as possible, that the picture turns out to be as best as possible at the end.
At this point, I'd love to talk to you about how you decided to go freelance, because you were working at Sephora for a while. And then I remember that when we first met up, you had opened your own studio. Do you want to talk about how you decided to go in that direction in terms of going freelance?
Yeah, to me, freelance always was a little intimidating and a little scary, because you just don't know what the future holds. And it's just kind of taking a leap of faith and almost relying and on your talent to make sure that you stay afloat. And so I decided to go freelance after being at Sephora for many years, because I was kind of, Sephora had ran its course. I had done what I had to do. And I just felt like I needed to focus on my personal growth as an artist. And I couldn't do that with a full-time job. I needed to get out of that and really be able to expand on my portfolio and take those jobs that I couldn't do because I was working full-time prior. So I decided to go freelance, and I opened up a studio right around the same time that I had decided to go full-time with freelance. And I think that was one of my biggest mistakes, was really opening up a makeup studio at the very start of my freelance career, because I hadn't had the clientele developed. I hadn't had the connections established. Those relationships weren't there with people. And I was just starting to build on my portfolio and really having quality work in my portfolio. So I would say that the studio was a great idea in theory, but it wasn't as successful as I had planned for it to be, because I almost jumped the gun and went ahead of myself. I almost felt like the studio was a measure of my success, or would have been something to validate the business side of what I do, but it wasn't. Really, I learned from that really what was the most important were the connections, and was the portfolio, and was my relationship with people and my clientele. So that was one of the lessons that I learned there with having my studio in the beginning, was that it wasn't what would validate what I do.
That's such a good point. But in so many ways, failure is so important, because I don't think you would have realized that, right? If you hadn't gone that route by opening your studio, I mean.
Yeah, no, I don't think I would have realized that the studio wasn't really what would bring me success. I think that having something at the time, I thought having something tangible, like a space would kind of solidify what I was doing, but it didn't. It was really about building those relationships and those connections with people that helped me become successful at what I do. I think sometimes as a makeup artist, we're always battling this concept with a lot of people that what we do is an actual career, that it's a job. And I needed, at the moment when I decided to become a freelance, I felt like I needed to have that as my backup, something to show that here, this is my business. You know, I have this studio space for you to come and get services done. And I didn't understand that that wasn't the important part. The important part was me going out and actually doing the work and building my clientele and building my network of people and putting quality work out into the universe, so that that's how I would get my jobs, you know, and not necessarily having a space to do that.
And how did you go about getting those clients and making those relationships?
A lot of it was just reaching out to people, word of mouth. I think a lot of it still is word of mouth and being flexible. I reached out to people on Instagram. I know I met you through Model Mayhem at the time, and just kind of putting myself out there. It was really about not being scared to put yourself out there and meeting people at events, working with event planners. It eventually all kind of worked itself out once I started to put myself out there.
I remember those days, Sally. We've gone to so many of those events and we've met so many people and we've had so many conversations as to how to get more work as well as to make it into the commercial world. And you have a very interesting way of creating your, I guess, your income stream, if you will, because you have a foot both in the bridal world as well as in the commercial world. And I don't think there are that many makeup artists who are able to do both. Can you talk to us about your decision to stay in both of those worlds and talk about like some of the joys and maybe if there are any pain points in doing both?
You either get categorized as a bridal makeup artist or as a commercial artist. And it's kind of taboo sometimes to be a bridal artist in the commercial world, because the commercial world is very clean and very streamlined. And when they think bridal, they think lots of makeup, they think a specific bridal look, and they think that you're not able to come out of that. What I feel is different with what I do and how I approach it is that I approach a lot of my bridal work in a way that's much more clean and streamlined, and it's a little bit more natural. That also translates into my commercial work. So I have a very specific look that I like to kind of keep along both worlds, where it's not heavy makeup. So I think it's easy to transition from one to the other in that sense. I mean, I can take my bridal look out there. I can make it glam. I can make it red carpet, but it will always have a quality to it that I think is never overdone. And I think that's how I'm able to flex between both the bridal world and the commercial world.
I agree with you, Francelli, because for a while I did a bridal photography. And the thing is that it does take a different skill set to go to the commercial world, only because there are things that have to be different because of the lights that we use, because of the way that we shoot the images. What have you learned about how makeup needs to look like on the skin when it is in front of studio lights versus natural light?
In studio light, everything's just more amplified. So you have to be really careful with how things look texturally on the skin. Say that I'm doing a commercial shoot for an athlete. Well, in real life, athletes aren't necessarily going to have makeup on while they're doing their sport. But in a commercial setting, you need that makeup in order for things to look polished. And again, so that there isn't as much editing at the end of the day. So if somebody has a blemish or somebody has uneven skin tone, I'm supposed to make it look as though they are naturally flawless on camera. And that takes a lot of skill with how you prep the skin and how much product you use. So it's really about being very meticulous when you're thinking about makeup on set and how it's going to be amplified with the lights and how something that's necessarily not as shiny in real life, maybe like a lip balm on somebody's lips, is going to be amplified on set and look extremely glossy. So just understanding the finishes and things is different versus doing makeup on a bride. You take those things into consideration, but you also know that it's expected for her to look like she has blush on. It's expected for her to look like she has a little bit of eyeliner on or lipstick on. Versus on set, it's usually you want it to look as though they have nothing on. They have something on. So it's really about being mindful as to what tools and products you're using and looking at it on screen too. I think it's really important that when you're on set, you're looking at what's being tethered onto the screen and you're able to make those adjustments in the moment on set if something's not looking right on screen.
I think you have a superpower of always being very present. And I feel like when I'm hanging out with you, whether we're like on an airplane heading to to LA on a shoot, or if we're just meeting up for our monthly lunches.
I know. I know. We're gonna do that again soon, hopefully.
Yes. This is an aside. Today I was getting dressed for this interview and I was like, if I were meeting up with Sully, she would look so ravishing and I would have to come in knowing that she was gonna look ravishing and I would have to like, you know, just kind of bring my A game.
Bring your A game, Martine. I don't think I've ever seen you look not ravishing. So you are always on it.
But you know how they say women dress for other women? Yeah. It's so true.
I'm not going to lie. I did put on some mascara and just a little bit of BB cream on my skin. I haven't worn makeup in a while, but I thought, well, if we're going to do this, I have to feel like I'm going to see Martine.
And I put on lipstick because I'm like, I'm going to see Sully. Going to professionalism, which is a weird thing to talk about because we're professionals, but it's not so weird because you get a whole host of people who show up who are on set. You know, we've been on shoots where we've had as many as like 20 people on set, but we've also been on shoots where it's just been you and me and Phil. Everyone, we talk, we joke about Phil because it's just our reflector. And so Sally's worked with me for, gosh, Sally, it's been more than about 5 years now?
Yeah, about 5 years.
We've had, you know, 3 o'clock call times, AM people, AM.
Yeah, early.
And anyone who works with me knows that I may be fun, but I like my early call times.
We have to find the light. That's the best light.
Yeah, that's the best light. You know, we've driven to Santa Monica at like 4:30 in the morning for an early call time, or we've just met up to do an evening shoot. You are just so graceful and so professional, meaning there. And so present. I'm like, girl, how do you do that? Is it like, are you inherently that way? Or is it something that you've worked on? Because when you're working with people and you need to calm them and you need to have them trust you, is it something that you've cultivated over time? Or are you just fabulous?
Oh, no. I think I've just grown to have a certain presence because of the longer I've done this, the more confident I've become and the more assured of myself I've become. So I think that's just kind of what's being projected. That's my comfort zone, is being in the moment when I'm doing what I do, you know?
So I can be like you.
You're amazing.
Well, I wanted to say too that one has to be present, especially when you are on a shoot, and for a makeup artist too, because you have to pay attention to what the skin is doing. And I know that, you know, you always pop in and do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and the stylist will do so in turn. And I've worked with a number of makeup artists. Not everyone is always very attentive. And I always have loved that about you and been so appreciative. And, you know, I say that whenever I have you on set, I don't have to worry because I know that you're going to bring that A game and that you're just going to be like phenomenal in terms of making sure that the talent looks good. Not only does the talent look good, but the client will see that we have a super good team.
Thank you. A little bit of that also has to do with my own selfishness because I tend to get the prints or see the images, the final images, and then just criticize all of what I do. Like, I could have done this better, or I could have like adjusted the brow just a little bit there. So I see all of the flaws in my work when I get it. And so in the moment, that is really part of what I'm looking at, is how is this photographing, so that I'm not, when I receive those prints at the end, I'm not like, you know, hitting myself saying, oh darn, I could have done this better. You know, I could have improved that better. So part of it is also just being a little OCD about what I put out there. And I think that I've just always had that bit of obsessive compulsive thing where I want things to be perfect.
Oh,
and
my
I think
God.
That's just like, I'm striving for perfection.
I am the same way. I am so OCD on set. And it's because it has to be, right? And
yeah.
But one of the things I've realized is, no matter how perfect it is and no matter how detailed the shoot deck is, I'm often always disappointed at the other end, because I start thinking, I could have done this better, I could have done that better, I could have. And I didn't know that other people, other artists, felt the same way. I thought it was just me.
No, yeah. And I think that's why I also love working with people that are that way, because I know that you take what you do super serious, and I take what I do, and the stylist will take what they do, and the hairstylist will do what they do. And we're all very meticulous people for the most part. I feel like that's kind of been the case in most of on sets that I've been doing, that I've been on. Is that everyone is doing their the best of what they do. Like, we're all experts in that niche. And so when you put that together, we're striving for a perfect product in the end. But things aren't ever perfect. So you'll always see the little flaws, you know, here and there. And you would wish that you would want to do things better the next time. So you're constantly learning. And I think that's part of the fun.
But I suppose that is the fun, because if things were always perfect, we wouldn't learn, and we wouldn't want to be better and better and beat ourselves the next time.
That's,
I always want to be better
true.
Than I was at the last shoot.
Me too. Always. Always want to be better. I'm like, you're your own self, like, competition, you know?
That's a really good way of putting it. And I've heard people say, don't compete with others. Instead, compete with who you were at your last job. Compare yourself to the person you were a year ago or 2 years ago. And in that vein, what has surprised you about your growth in the last 5 years or so, or since you've left Sephora?
Funny, because I do see my previous, you know, the work, even the first shoot that I did with you, Martine, and the growth that I've seen. It's just, you literally can see it from shoot to shoot, how I feel like I am becoming more creative since I left Sephora, or since I started freelancing, because I feel that I am almost allowing myself to become more creative. It happens, I feel like, when you're little, you have all this creativity and you want to create things, and then you start certain jobs and they kind of limit that, and you lose yourself in that routine of things. I've been striving to be more creative and to create things that I'm proud of every single time I do a shoot. Just add a little something that I probably didn't do before, or work with new products and new techniques that I didn't necessarily use before. I don't ever want to feel stuck with doing the same thing over and over again. So whether that be on set in a commercial shoot, or doing an editorial, or working with a client or a bride, I try to make it interesting every single time. And I think that has shown in the body of work that I'm creating, is just kind of this transition from being very safe to starting to get more creative and exploring different ways of doing things. And you can see that kind of transitioning with my work.
So where do you go to get inspiration?
I think it's just keeping up with what's in fashion. What's kind of on the runways is always inspiring. What I see on TV or in movies is always inspiring. I'm just constantly looking at things, you know, just constantly looking at what's trending, and also kind of looking at the past, at how things were done. I think we always kind of revert to the past and transition it into the future. Also surrounding myself with creative people. A lot of my friends are makeup artists, and I just can't help it. I just surround myself with people who are either makeup artists or stylists or hairstylists, talking about what we do is always part of the conversation, and what others are doing is what kind of keeps me creative. And obviously looking on social media too, and see what other people, what other creatives are doing, and drawing inspiration from those people, from the people that I admire, the artists that are doing the work on sets and in shoots for Vogue and things like that.
So much has changed since we first went into quarantine, hasn't it?
Being a makeup artist is going to look very different, being that we're in front of people's, you know, face, we're talking to them directly, we're touching their face, all of our products are touching their face. And so it's going to look really different. I mean, I've always been super hygienic and super aware of how I treat my product and how I treat the person in front of me, because I put myself in that position. I wouldn't want anyone to use a dirty brush on me. So I don't use dirty brushes on people, and I make sure that I keep my kit as clean and sanitized as possible. As a makeup artist, you're always a bit of a germaphobe, because you know that when you touch something, can't touch over here, and then you're cross-contaminating, and you're always aware of not cross-contaminating things. So this has just amplified that state of mind, where I know that if I'm touching something, I have to immediately rethink the way I'm going to touch something else, you know, and how I'm going to go about working with people.
I've been thinking of the same thing and trying to figure out what procedures we need to put in place. I know what you mean. Things are going to change so much for us, especially when we go back in studio or even when we're on set for different shoots. And we're going to have a lot to learn. That's for certain. So Sally, I've loved talking with you, and I'm sorry we have to end, but I'd love to ask you a few quick fire questions.
Sure.
Can you talk to us about your all-around magical beauty product, the one that you go back to over and over again?
I'm always a fan of a BB cream. I will always have a BB cream at hand. If you don't know what a BB cream is, it's essentially a multitasker. It's in lieu of a foundation, and it just evens out your complexion. So there is color to it. There's added benefits like skincare. There's sunscreen in it. There's hydration. I wouldn't replace my moisturizer with it, but it just gives a really pretty overall finish that, and you can apply it with your fingertips. So it's just an easy product to use. And that's kind of a staple product that I always have with me, is a good BB cream.
Is there one brand of BB cream that you like over most?
I can be a little bougie when it comes to products as far as foundations. I do like Givenchy, and I like Dior's, and I like lots of French brands, because I think the French do it right when it comes to complexion products. So I am a big fan of luxury French foundation or BB cream products for an all over finish on the skin. So I will always go to those brands, because I know that they always feel really good.
Ooh la la.
I know.
Okay. Any favorite books that you would like to recommend to us?
Well, since we are on the topic of makeup artistry, there's always really great books. The History of Makeup is really great. Kevin Aucoin's Face Forward is a really interesting, great book to look at if you're interested in learning a little bit more about makeup.
Okay. Lastly, tea or coffee?
Coffee. Always. I have coffee with me right now.
Well, Sally, can you tell us how we could best keep in touch with you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Francelli_makeup, and you can visit my website at francellimakeup.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Sally.
Thank you, Martine.
It's been so much fun chatting with you, and I can't wait to see you in person so I could give you a big hug.
Thank you, Martine. I can't wait to see you too.